Education Podcast listeners. This is Kevin Eva, the editor-in-chief of the journal, speaking to you today with fellow countrymen, Christina St. Ange from Université de Sherbrooke, their Department of Medicine, has a paper along with her co-authors coming out in the October 2020 issue of Medical Education entitled Lessons from the Implementation of Developmental Progress Assessment, a Scoping Review. Christina, I know that you, like many others, have had many disruptions over the past few months, so I'm very appreciative that you've taken the time to do this.
I'm happy to talk to you about this paper today.
So, lessons from the implementation of developmental progress assessments. Most of those words are self-evident and very clear, but for the sake of those who don't know what developmental progress assessment is, can I ask you to start with a bit of an explanation?
So when we're talking about DPA, if I can use it for short, it's referencing to the assessment that we would embed in a competency-based program where ideally we have developmental trajectories, so paths that would inform us on what is expected of students. So DPA, Developmental Progress Assessment, is really embedding assessment throughout these trajectories as checkpoints to make sure that our students are progressing towards competency.
And so you obviously have some experience with these things within Sherbrooke. In your context, are these things generally formative, higher stakes, a mix of both?
From what we've seen, it's a mix of both. If we're looking at Canadian side of things, they're trying at the Royal College to make these a bit more summative. So checkpoints to make sure that residents are progressing through the milestones and achieving their levels, expected levels of competence. But it's also seen a bit more on the formative side of what I know, at least at Sherbrooke, when it's embedded in the undergraduate programs. So there are ways of giving students and faculty cues to see how the students are progressing through the program, if they're meeting expectations, if they need some remedial help. So at that level, it would be more formative assessment, yeah, lower stake.
And the way in which that's done, the title and abstract doesn't imply that it's a particular format that's being used for this. What would be most typical in terms of how these data are collected to try to help people identify where they are along that developmental trajectory?
The rubric could be used in two different ways to measure the milestone. So it could be milestone one for a resident one. It was partially achieved, mostly achieved, completely achieved. But we could, and we've seen rubrics being used for a given milestone, describing the expected performance for an R1, an R2, an R3, so resident one, resident two, resident three level. So there would be different tools that could be used for developmental progress assessment, and it really goes to what the program wants to do with the information. Is it a tick box of it's met or not? Or it's more informative of what exactly students can do at the level where they are currently. So that's the interesting part for me, anyways, about developmental progress assessment, because it can be really tailored to different specialties, programs, levels of students.
And so what was it that led you to think a scoping review was required on this topic? What were you trying to achieve by undertaking this effort?
Oh, that's interesting. And I'd like to see your face when I say this. as you may know, I'm a firm believer that we often use the same words to say different things. So this is not the first venture for me into trying to demystify a concept. And I was seeing that developmental progress assessment was becoming increasingly popular within medical education, especially because of some of the stuff coming out of the Royal College with the revamping of competency by design. And being from a psychometrics background, having been part of discussions in that field, about the challenges and struggles associated with trying to measure something longitudinally, and measuring progress is even, I think, a bigger challenge. I thought we just needed to take a step back, take a pause, and try to figure out what exactly is developmental progress assessment for us in health profession education. How have people been trying to implement it? And what do we currently have as evidence about its potential outcomes or its validity? So it was really trying to get a lay of the land and hopefully try to be able to make some suggestions or give some ideas of how it could be implemented to reach its potential goals.
I think that latter bit is actually one of the reasons this work has so much value, is that you're clearly not just looking into the literature at what has been done, but in more deeply exploring the implementation strategies, it quite naturally offers recommendations in terms of what people have found to be difficult points versus what has enabled them to engage in this sort of activity. What would you advise others, given what you've discovered with respect to how to go about developing a developmental progress assessment?
So what we've seen through the scoping is when there was already a culture of seeing assessment as contributing to learner development, it was easier at that time or in those circumstances to add a layer of assessment as assessment used to track students within their progress within the program. So having a local culture of assessment for learning, another big word right now in competency-based education, but having that local culture seemed to be a great facilitator to the implementation of BPA. Already having milestones or developmental trajectories that are explicit within the program. So speaking from my university, Sherbrooke revamped entirely its undergraduate medical education program recently and embedded explicitly these developmental trajectories. So it's easier for us to create portfolios or assessments that are layered on the trajectories. We're not creating an assessment and a trajectory. The trajectory is already there. So that was two of the biggest facilitators. And the other thing, it's related to implementation, but it's also related to developing DPA. It's having user-friendly, reliable, and accessible technology to support DPA. Because BPA allows us to gather a lot of information on our students. There's a lot of little evaluation snippets here and there to document where they're at on the trajectory. But that information needs to be treated by a group of people ideally, but it needs to be documented, collected somewhere. So we saw that the programs, the people that had access to good technology to capture this information, store that information, lived a better experience when implementing DPA.
So it sounds to me almost as though you're observing that the programs themselves are on a developmental trajectory, potentially towards the use of these strategies. And am I right in inferring from what you just said that if that particular culture doesn't exist at the moment at an individual's institution, that in fact they probably want to start with some preliminary steps towards building it before they jump to developmental progress assessment?
Yes, I really like the analogy that programs are on a developmental trajectory themselves. And the reason why the culture change is so important is because of the quantity of assessment that we're doing in DPA. It's a lot of snippets, little snippets here and there. And if assessment is lived as something that is threatening, it becomes a heavier load to bear to receive many, many, many assessments throughout a week. It also becomes a heavier load to bear to give many assessments throughout the week. So if we change the relationship with assessment, it makes it easier to intensify the quantity of assessment or increase the quantity of assessment done within the week. When that change isn't made, there's a resistance to receive the assessment and to give the assessment.
So carrying on the metaphor a little bit further, with developmental progress assessment, you need to identify what is the trajectory, what are the milestones or competencies that you're trying to lead one towards at the end of the program. Given the review that you undertook, for those who are on this trajectory trying to help their programs develop DPA, what would you say are the key long-term outcomes in terms of what they should be striving towards? How do they know if they've got it right when they start developing the implementation of DPA? Does that make sense?
It does. It does. It's a really good question. I'm trying to find an equally good answer. From what I gather from the scoping, and I'm going to pick a bit into a different study that we're conducting right now. So indicators of a good implementation would probably be that programs feel that they identify more easily students that need remedial, students that need additional help. So those students that we've been talking about in the literature, in the community, as falling in a crack. So nobody picked them up or identified them as needing assistance. So that is something that came up in the scoping and in other work that we're doing right now. Another potential outcomes of knowing that they did this job well, faculty and student would be more appreciative of the feedback. So from what we gather, faculty feel more confident providing feedback within the context of DPA, because they're comparing students' performance to expected performance. So it's easier to put words on what was done correctly and what would need improvement. And students don't feel as threatened by the feedback because it's not about them. It's about how they compare to this explicit expectation. So getting a sense of their resonance in faculty, how is their relationship with assessment, would be a good indicator of a good DPA implementation in my mind. It's interesting because that brings me to one of the things that I find super interesting in the scoping is how we've looked at DPA to make decisions about adopting it or not. So going back to our results, we found very little evidence of validity as we would define it in a psychometric way. So we don't have a lot of stats, traditional psychometrics. But it's DPA is getting more and more traction. More and more people are adopting it. But they're looking at the impact DPA can have on programs and residents. So helping residents become more self-regulated in their learning, if that's a word I can use. So they're becoming more independent, proactive in seeking feedback and knowing what they need to achieve, what's the next step, and how do they become themselves competent. Improved communication between faculty and residents. Information for program evaluation. Are the residents moving throughout the program as they are expected? So it seems that these potential outcomes, and not only potential, because they've been observed in the literature, are driving our program's decisions to adopt the idea of DPA and to implement it in their programs. And that's speaking volumes, because we have little psychometric evidence. So we're not looking to the traditional validity, but more of the potential benefits that this assessment can have on both trainee and program. So I thought that was one of the very interesting outcomes of our study.
Definitely is, and again reinforces that notion that this is about trying to help learners and programs get better, more so than simply measurement of learning. So that actually brings me nicely to what will make my last question, which is to think about the next steps. You've spoken in a way that implies that this is still very much a growing area. What do you wish you had found in the literature that you couldn't identify in terms of what do you think is the key priority for how we continue to make this sort of work better?
So what I was looking for that I didn't find yet, which means for the literature side of things, we might have to go above and beyond health profession education, but I was looking for the theoretical underpinnings of developmental progress assessment. The idea makes sense. It resonates with people, but I was trying to figure out on what theories does this sit to make sure that we're implementing it appropriately. So going above what are others doing, but are respecting the essence of DPE when we do it locally. So I'm still looking for that. But one thing that we're doing now is talking to people that are on the ground to see how they are living, like truly living the implementation of DPE and how that can subsequently inform others doing the implementation also.
Wonderful. I infer from you alluding to one of the projects you're currently working on that you're going to continue developing this work. And so hopefully some of that theorization and the guidance it'll provide will come from you, and very much look forward to seeing it.
Well, thank you. We're looking forward to seeing the results too.
Just for a close, I'll remind anyone listening that if they're looking for the article we've been discussing, it's titled Lessons from the Implementation of Developmental Progress Assessment, a Scoping Review. It's in the October 2020 issue of Medical Education, and the first author, the individual you've been listening to, is Christina Saint-Ange. Thank you, Christina, and good luck with everything moving forward.
Thank you, Kevin.